good.
Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for February the 15th, 2017. We are gathered today for the purpose of public hearing and public testimony on House Bill 5039, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And so I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 5039. I'm going to ask our professional staff, Ms. Beidle, to introduce what we're up to today. And one other by way of administrative announcements, I think there's going to be a second sign-in sheet, and I'm going to try to figure out how we're going to time limit people. We want to make sure that everybody that's here gets an opportunity to be heard, which means we may have to limit testimony. So, Ms. Beidle.
So we're here for the second day of a public hearing on the Department of Veterans Affairs budget bill. We'll have the agency finish up their presentation. If you're looking for that presentation, it's going to be posted on OLIS under yesterday's date. And then we'll have a presentation from the DAS Chief Financial Office and then public testimony.
Okay, colleagues, any questions about how we're going to proceed? There being none, Representative Evans, and let me start by thanking you for your service to our country and invite your testimony.
Thank you. Co-Chair Johnson and Co-Chair Gomberg, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. For the record, I am Paul Evans. I represent House District 20, Monmouth Independence, West Salem, South Salem, arguably one of the prettiest districts in the House. I always have to couch that. Really, my message today is three parts. The first part is to say thank you very much for the hard work that you do every day in trying to put together a budget, especially in these challenging times. I know everybody has wants, everybody is trying to emphasize their needs, and you have to hear all of it. So I want to say thank you for doing that. Second thing is, we did actually have, this past November, 84%, a historic number of Oregonians vote in favor of a veterans set-aside as part of the lottery. And I want to echo much of what I understand Senator Boquist said yesterday. He and I are working together very hard to make sure that the numbers reflected in the Ways and Means framework in terms of budget for Veterans Outreach and Services, that we provide you not only a plan of where the money for that increased investment could go, but quite frankly, what the outcomes should be and how we can make an impact throughout the state, not just on veterans, but in many ways by getting veterans off of state systems and freeing up state capacities. Bottom line is, we believe that right now there is a particular moment in time. We have literally five cohorts of veterans. I'm sure staff is already going to be talking about the major issues that they've been working on and their POPs. The thing for me is this. For my generation of veterans, the Vietnam era was a very critical role. A lot of the men and women that served in Vietnam never got the credit, never got the help they needed. And despite that, they have been pioneers in trying to fight for veterans' rights for my generation. And the reason I'm pushing so hard on this is because there are literally thousands of Vietnam vets that are now getting to a point in their own personal lives where they need the services, but they can't get them unless we get them in the system and get them the care that the VA is required to provide. So, again, I know that you have many competing interests. My promise to you, I will work hand-in-hand, side-by-side, with both the staff, all of the advocates, and Senator Boquist to make sure that the recommendations we forward you are the best we can come up with in terms of the most optimal use of the additional resources that the veterans, because of the voters, hopefully have a chance to put forward. That's really my message. I appreciate what you're doing. We'll get you the best data we can. And again, as this process unfolds, specific outcomes, we hope to be able to show you snapshots of where we think we can go with it.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. I just want to repeat a question that you asked yesterday and perhaps get the good representative's perspective on this. We've got 300,000 veterans here in Oregon, 72,000 of them with service-related disabilities, and yet we're only reaching about three out of 10 veterans and getting them enrolled in the process. What is the resistance? What are the challenges to getting people to step forward and to receive the benefits they've earned?
Co-Chair Johnson and Co-Chair Gomberg, thank you for that question. There's actually different answers based on the era of veterans. So I can break it into three components, I think, at least from the last 10 years of studying this. World War II and Korea veterans know that they probably earned their service and know that they probably have care that they have earned, but they don't want to take something that could get in the way of somebody else getting service when somebody else may need it more than them from their perspective. Especially Korean War vets, who were really, in many ways, in the shadow of the World War II veterans, those vets are loath to ask for anything. And the problem, of course, is the way the federal government is set up, a vet has to ask in order to get the things that they have earned. This isn't something that they haven't earned. It's something that actually, when they signed the dotted line, was part of the deal, but they think is a handout. So for World War II and Korea vets, it's a very different issue. For Vietnam era, and one might even argue Cold War era vets, it's trust in government. They came back from Vietnam, and the VA system at that time had been underfunded. The war was not popular. The goals of the war, I think, were lost in terms of history, and I want to emphasize that for just a second. One of the things I try to do when I'm talking with a Vietnam veteran or a group of Vietnam veterans is try to explain that from my perspective, after 20 years in uniform and studying the Vietnam War as soldiers study the wars before them, that though the Battle of Vietnam may have been lost, by fighting in Vietnam, we didn't have a global fight with Russia. And sometimes, if things are put in perspective, it actually brings things into focus. The Vietnam era men fought in a particular environment that was constrained. They learned in many ways not to trust promises from the government for help during the war, and they came back to a public that was confused and frustrated because in many ways they'd been lied to by some of the same people that had lied to the veterans. And then when they went to get care, it wasn't available. So for Vietnam era veterans, it's literally creating that sense of trust. So part of it is outreach, but not just outreach saying, hi, how are you? Are you a veteran? But actually building relationships first to be able to build that reservoir of trust to bring them in. For the more current era veterans, Persian Gulf I to my era, there are so few veterans that serve that part of the process is finding them. When right now we have been fighting this war, depending on what label you want to give it, since 9/11, 2001. Well, by my watch, it's 2017. That's 16 years of fighting wars in places we can talk about and fighting wars in places that we don't talk about, but we're still getting casualties from. So when we mobilized, we never built the size of military for the war that we confronted. We used the National Guard, we used the Reserve, and we just ran the hell out of the active duty. So when you come out of that experience, you cluster around people that are like you. Well, Oregon doesn't have any active duty bases. Oregon doesn't have a real, quote-unquote, military culture, whatever that may be. We're a National Guard state. We do have 200 to 300 veterans returning home every month, at least last time I looked at the records. But finding these folks is really the problem. Once you identify them, then you can actually begin to build a relationship. So part of the problem is we do only have about 72,000 folks that are getting care and services when we have 300,000+ veterans that are entitled. But each one we get into the system is a victory because, again, not only do we get them what they've earned, but in many cases, especially among current era veterans that are struggling with reintegrating into society, you get them out of other costs that right now the state can't really afford either.
Senator Hansel.
Representative, that is the most complete and best answer I have ever heard. I agree. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Clarifies for me that question beyond belief. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Colleagues, any other questions for Representative Evans? Thank you so much for coming in. And just to explain to the audience, as is the practice in this building, courtesies are extended to members of the legislature. Representative Parrish has joined us and has paper in her hand, leading me to believe she wishes to testify.
Madam Co-Chair, that's a very safe bet on your part. For the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, Westland and Tualatin. For those of you who have served before, it's not a secret that Measure 96 was about 4 years of trying to get to the ballot a permanent allocation of lottery dollars for veterans programs and services. We wanted 5%, And after the governor's budget, recommended budget, I wish we'd have stuck with our signature gathering initiative to get the 5%. And it would not surprise people to know that if we are not going to fully fund veterans as voters intended, we might go back for an additional allocation. I do want to share with you over the weekend, there was polling. It will be released. I'd be happy to at some point get a copy of the polling memo to you. But we asked voters now after Measure 96 and knowing that there's budget holes and cuts, would you still like to see this fully funded? And a full 74% of Oregonians said yes. So to me, that is a very strong indication that even in a down budget cycle, Oregonians want us to fund our veterans. And you heard Representative Evans talk about some of the economic benefit when we do this. We have kind of an interesting situation coming up in that a lot of our programs are predicated on precarious funding mechanisms to bring back things like Medicaid dollars, and even if with the new education secretary, if suddenly there is a change in how we do education policy, that might change how we get our federal ed dollars back. This is one thing the federal government can't screw up. These benefits are earned. They belong to the soldier who earned them, the veteran who earned them. And when we bring them back to our state, for every $1 we invest, we are bringing back over $70 back to our state. And one of the pieces to me that is has been very frustrating in this whole dialogue for the last 4 years as we have tried to get this to the ballot and then did get it to the ballot, is we never got an impact statement that would properly show what happens when we move veterans out of our state-funded services and properly align them with VA services. It is a huge savings to our general fund. In Washington State, they have done this, and they are saving millions of dollars out of their state general fund. So to me, the notion that we would not fully fund this at what the voters' expectation is, and my understanding of that is the current biennium service level plus lottery dollars is what the voter expectation is with Measure 96, is that we're missing this opportunity if we don't fully fund this to have that general fund savings in other parts of the budget. But then we're also missing the opportunity to realize through like disability compensation and retirement compensation that's earned but not being given to a veteran, that those dollars come back into our general fund via income tax. So as an example, my own spouse is currently service-connected, disabled at a pretty high rate. And a portion of the dollars he gets are tax-free disability compensation. I have three children. We spend those in our community. And those dollars come back to our general fund. And there was never a proper analysis done that shows how much of that disability compensation, when we go out and reach into veterans who've earned those dollars, is actually coming back to us in the form of income tax. I actually believe Measure 96, as it was written, if you did that type of analysis, I believe that we would actually be revenue positive for this and not taking away from the general fund. I appreciate that the co-chair's budget went further than the governor's budget, but I think we can find a way to fill that additional gap so we can meet voters' expectation. I've heard this compared to Measure 98 and 99, and the fact is, Measure 98 and 99, while wonderful and I voted for them, they were citizens' initiatives. This initiative came from us. We understood what it meant to send this out to voters, that there would be a lottery allocation and an expectation of a general fund allocation that is at the current service level. We're not asking necessarily for roll-ups of the 15-17 biennium, but we are asking for that full $13 million plus the lottery dollars, an expectation that there's about $30 million going in. And I think if we do the work that needs to be done around helping veterans find these benefits, earn these benefits, and also going that last mile. We have veterans right now who currently get benefits who are stuck in the VA process, like my own spouse, for 5 years, stuck trying to get to that last mile. There's a lot of dollars that are left there on the table. And again, the federal government can't say, even with a new administration, that we're not going to give veterans these benefits. These are entitlement dollars. They're earned dollars. They're part of the federal budget. It's not like sort of changes to Medicaid and other budget items that we rely on. This one's a guarantee, and we need to make the investment. So I'll take any questions, but I really appreciate those of you who voted to refer this to the voters, everyone in the room who I know voted on this. We've got beauty of this is we now have a built-in audience who's going to show up now at all these Ways and Means hearings. We've never had that before, and this is the first time I've seen veterans in the 6 years I've been in this building really coalesce around something and hold us accountable for how we treat them, and I think it's really important that we do the right thing.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Representative Parrish? There being none, thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
It is the practice in this building to extend the courtesy of early testimony to those that have driven over 100 miles. Only one person has checked the box. Anybody, this is Mr. Whipple. Anybody else come from more than 100 miles? Okay. You have, great. I'm going to bring people up in panels. So, Mr. Whipple, and I don't know your name, forgive me, so come up, please. And as,
but I will.
Oh, you're part of this group that wants to, you must be VFW Judith Berger. Good, you'll be up next. Mr. Willis, I know you haven't come for more than 100 miles, but as a courtesy to you for your stalwart leadership of ODVA for all those years, will you join this panel? And then next is Russ Clark, who I know to be the CVSO in one of my favorite counties. Mr. Clark, would you come forward, please? All right, so this is our first panel of three. I've done a rough calculation. We're going to try to limit everybody to 4 minutes, and if you can help us buy back a few extra minutes, we'll come streaking in just under the line. So I don't care what order you go in. Mr. Willis, stop glad-handing and get up here and testify. All right, let's start with Mr. Whipple.
Good afternoon, Senator Johnson, Representative Gomberg, and members of the Transportation and Economic Subcommittee. My name is Byron Whipple. I'm a veteran and a retired Navy Mass Chief Petty Officer. I am the Veteran Service Officer for Union County, and for the most part, I can speak to the issues that the VSOs in Eastern Oregon encounter. My veterans are elderly, approaching retirement age. World War II, Korea, and Vietnam veterans are my biggest majority. I do quite a few pension claims. This means my veterans and their widows live below the poverty level. Lack of transportation is a tremendous hurdle that we have to overcome. We in Union County have the VA community-based outpatient clinic. In that clinic, there is no doctor, there is no physician assistant, there's no nurse practitioner, there's not a mental health provider. We have not had a full-time doctor since September of 2016. We do get assistance from the chief of staff from the Walla Walla VA Medical Center. He comes down every other week and sees approximately 10 patients a day on the days he is available. In theory, he sees approximately 100 veterans a month. But if you've watched the weather recently, you realize that he has to travel 90 miles plus over the Blue Mountain Range during winter storm conditions. He doesn't always make it. Walla Walla, Washington is our closest VA medical center. However, it is not a true VA medical center. It has no inpatient beds. It has very limited specialty care, optometry, audiology, and dental. And just last week, it was closed for the weather. Our second closest VA medical center is Boise, Idaho. At 140 miles, it is not close to home by any means. With all this mileage that my local veterans have to travel, Union County has no disabled veterans van, and we are not one of the 10 highly rural counties that receive $50,000 a year from the federal government to transport veterans to their health care appointments. Those counties, all in Eastern Oregon, are governed by 38 U.S.C. 1710, which means highly rural is defined as 7 people per square mile or less. With the restoration of the past funding levels and the augmentation of Measure 96 funding, there may be enough that I can assist in providing transportation to my veterans and their widows. Additionally, I have veterans who are frequently in crisis or homeless. Last week, for example, I had a 75-year-old veteran who was dropped off by the Greyhound bus in LeGrand due to weather. Interstate 84 was closed. The veteran had dementia and a previous head injury. He was a diabetic, had stomach issues, and was wearing a catheter. And these were just the tip of the iceberg. The veteran was released from the Portland VA Medical Center psychiatric ward a week or so earlier. The previous two evenings, he was in the hospital in the Dalles, and then in the hospital in La Grande. Each day he was transported back to the bus depot just to be put on a bus and shuttled onto the next town. He was traveling on to Ontario because it was a nice place he remembered from a long time ago. He was brought to my attention because he was dazed, confused, and sick, and he was a veteran. The local clinic, and I don't make this up, the local VA clinic phone lines were down, and the Walla Walla VA Medical Center was unsure what exactly to do. They needed time. I had to call on my team, my local American Legion, VFW, and Community Connections. We utilized local resources from private citizens to feed and house this veteran for 5 days. This bought the much-needed time that the federal VA needed to take care of this veteran. He was ultimately taken to the Walla Walla VA Medical Center, where they arranged off-campus secure housing. Please remember that our closest VA medical center does not have inpatient facilities. Community Connections of Northeast Oregon funded his transport utilizing much needed STF funding. This is not an isolated incident in Eastern Oregon. When the weather turns bad, this is life-saving. This is just one of the challenges we as rural county veteran service officers must face every day in providing quality care and services to our veterans. We do not have local missions or shelters that certain cities and counties have. We do not have the extra tax dollars to fund these emergencies. Last November, we did have hope. We did have over 80% of our voters who voted in good faith on Measure 96. They voted to augment the governor's budget to historically funded levels with lottery dollars, so that maybe there will be some hope to fund and assist veteran service officers in addressing the above issues that confront veterans.
Mr. Whipple, are you close? You're already 2 minutes over.
Thank you, ma'am. I am done.
Thank you. Your testimony is very compelling, and if you could provide it to the professional staff, we'll make sure that the whole panel has a copy of it.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, and thank you for coming the distance you did. Mr. Clark.
Thank you for having me here, Senator Johnson, Representative Gove. I had a written statement prepared, and I actually don't want to go over that written statement. I want to talk about reality. I work in a community action team. You're one of the few veterans in this state that does that. I have the opportunity to see those veterans come in every day, and not only can I get them services they need from the VA side, but get them the services from the community action team as well. But I wanted to talk about the question of why we can't reach these people. You know, if you look at the generational thing, we know the World War II Korean veterans just a little more stoic. Dad, mom just didn't want to go to the government if they didn't have to. Vietnam veterans, well, what did they do when they came back? Well, a lot of them got crapped on. But at the same time, what did they do? They started school. They started raising families. So they didn't have time to do that. Just like all of us when we're young, we don't have time to do that. What's our Gulf War veterans doing now? What are these young people doing? They're in school. They're raising their families. The problems aren't that bad as much as the family needs are. So when are we going to see them? I think we're going to see them in about 5 to 6 more years. It's going to be a flood of them coming in simply because they're doing what their young people do. They're raising families, having kids, and getting on with life. But when the problems of life start catching up, age starts catching up, all those things, we're going to see that flood come in. And we need to be prepared for that. We owe it to those people. And we owe it to these Oregon National Guardsmen, which we deployed 4 or 5 times. These guys are coming back with traumatic injuries, traumatic brain injuries, amputations, you name it, they're coming back with. We sent them as Oregonians. We sent them. We owe it to them to give them the resources they need. We owe it to them to give them the mental health clinics they need. We owe it to them to get transportation resources so we can get them to appointments. We owe it to them to get them get our homeless veterans someplace to stay. The suicide rate is unbelievable. We've got to do something. We cannot rest on our laurels and just let things go as they are. We voted for that measure to increase and enhance those resources for our veterans. We owe it to them. And if nothing else, you think of those young Oregon National Guardsmen and women that we sent over. multiple times. Those are our sons, our daughters, our mothers and fathers. We owe it to them and to our older veterans, the Vietnam veterans, World War II, Korea, Gulf War, Cold War. We have different things. We're aging. Our requirements are a little different. We've got physical disabilities. A lot of us, some of us are losing our license. We need transportation. We've got mental health issues. I find with most Vietnam veterans, when they retire is when the flood comes back and all of a sudden PTSD creeps its head up. And that's what's happening with that baby boomer generation right now. They're retiring, and the number of Vietnam vets coming in with mental health issues is tremendous. We've got to do something with it. We have the opportunity with Measure 96 to do that. I just ask you to fully fund it as we did in the 15-17 budget. We got $13 million. Give us the $13 million and give us the $17.5 that is also there. Fully fund it. We owe it to these folks. Any questions?
Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Clark? Mr. Clark, if you had a written statement and you'd like to make it available to the committee, we'll make sure that it becomes part of the permanent record. And in the interest of full disclosure, my husband is the chair of the board where Mr. Clark works. Mr. Willis.
Madam Co-Chair and Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm the former director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. In addition to that, I'm a service-connected disabled Vietnam veteran. I'm also the state commander of the American Legion. So I'm here wearing several different hats today, but the bottom line is that I just want to echo what some people have already said, so I can be fairly brief, which is unusual for me. I, like many other veterans, went out and spoke to groups of veterans and to the public in terms of voting for Measure 96. I also read to them directly from the voter's pamphlet as to what those dollars were going to do. Clearly, the message was these were supplemental funds. These funds were not designed to replace general fund dollars, but to enhance services beyond the current service level. When the measure passed by 84%, which is the highest number that anyone can remember in modern Oregon electoral history, I was ecstatic. But needless to say, when the governor's proposed budget came out, it did not align with the wishes of the voters or the veterans community here in Oregon. But I knew that hers was a proposed budget, that the real work, the real slogging would occur here in this body, and this committee being one of those moving parts. And it's a long haul. It's months and months of hard, hard work. So it's good to say up front where the veterans are coming from and how they feel, and of course, in my case, how the American Legion statewide feels. And so I will tell you that this Saturday, the United Veterans Groups of Oregon are going to meet to discuss specifically how we should divide up, or propose to you to divide up these $18.5 million in lottery dollars. Some of the proposals I see being made, and I agree with, are an increased resource to county, state, and national service officers. Right off the top, the boots on the ground people, we need to reinforce their funding level. We need to increase funding for the lines of life for the purpose of reducing veteran suicide. It is ridiculous that we do not have more of an emphasis on what in many cases, not all, but many cases can be preventable, including public education as to the signs to look for in their own family members when they are contemplating suicide. We also need to increase funding for the Oregon Veteran Emergency Assistance Fund that is currently within the ODVA budget. In addition to that, we need to increase funding for the Oregon Veteran Educational Aid Program. Many of our more senior Oregon veterans who are still in the workforce no longer qualify for any kind of GI Bill. It's time for them to change a career field. What do? Whether it's a trade school or an academic education through a junior college or one of our four-year universities, they need to have a place to turn for those funds. Look at the cost of one course book in college today, just one book, and that'll tell you people need some assistance here. We need to find increased funding for veterans' transitional housing, getting people off the streets into a safe, secure environment, and getting them squared away, getting them a job, getting them secure housing, and moving them out. There's a wonderful program in place and has been for a number of years in Roseburg where they come in and it's two and out. 24 months and you're out of there. That's what I think we need to do. And finally, let me just say that we need to do additional funding for the drivers for the DAV vans across the state. We have the vans, we don't have enough drivers, and we need some money to pay for those drivers, and part of that should come out of these funds. And if possible, the establishment of a contingency fund within ODVA to meet any unseen needs that may occur during the biennium and keep them from having to come back here to the emergency committee. And I think that would be the first time ever in the history of the organization. Madam Chair, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Mr. Willis, I have one. I think you're uniquely situated to help with this. One of the dilemmas that I have is that you've ticked through a variety of different things that we need. Let me just touch on transitional housing.
Right.
Writ large, that sounds great. If you have any advice on the most efficacious, because already this money is being nibbled up like Pac-Man, and when people say medical services, I don't think you mean aromatherapy. And so to the degree that you can be as specific for those efficacious delivery points, that would be helpful. I don't want to create a whole new cottage industry based on the fact that there's $18 million floating around for veterans. I'd like to keep it going through the established lines. My own personal preference, and I'm not just pandering to Mr. Clark because he's a constituent, but is the CVSOs. I think that we all heard the emotion in these two gentlemen's voices, and it has been my experience with the CVSOs that the leave no man behind ethos that attaches with your work is extraordinary. But to the degree that you can help us understand what are those delivery pathways that make sense so that we don't smear the benefits so thin, giving something to everybody, that we have diminished its opportunity to bend the curve in service to veterans. So that would be my request of you.
Well, in my attempt at brevity, I will respond very quickly.
You've already failed. You went a minute over. Mr. Willis and I have known each other a long time. I can poke at him.
Yes. That's why the service officers were number one on my list. I couldn't agree with you more. That's where the rubber meets the road. Transitional housing, second issue, I agree. I'm talking about existing programs that work.
If you will give them to us by name.
Yes.
And the other thing that would be very helpful is even in this room, there's going to be differences of opinion.
Of course.
And to the degree that you have tapped into the most veterans to help guide us, the thing that gets me is that on farm bills, for example, I used to go to the Farm Bureau and say, what do you farmers think? Well, they're all over the place now. So I got farmers that want organic. I got farmers that I can no longer go to those traditional places and get a snapshot in time, and I'm going to submit that probably veterans should not be lumped into one big opinion, but to the degree that you can demonstrate that you have tapped into those, I'll be eager to see Representative Parrish's polling, that you have the most unanimity among veterans would be very helpful. Cool.
Will do, Senator.
Thank you, gentlemen, in particular your trip from over on the frozen side of the state.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Next panel up is going to be Jason Carroll, Ken Kraft, and Judith Berger. And again, if any of you have written testimony, you can make it available to the professional staff, and it will be disseminated to everyone. You know, got to make sure that the professional staff has their coffee. This could be very serious. All right. I don't care what order you go. If you've got
we have an order.
Okay. Well, then you go in order.
My name is Jason Carroll. I'm a combat veteran with 4 years service in Vietnam, service in Somalia and Korea.
I'm a past state commander of the Veterans Foreign Wars and currently serve as our Veterans Service Committee Chairman. We have a position to offer you today that's from the Department of Oregon, Veterans of Foreign Wars. Understand that our request is an addition to what is normally funded from general fund funds in the past. So we don't think we should have to compete for with the county service officers, with the American Legion, or any of the other to support our service officers, that there should be enough money to support all the service officers. The service officer, a qualified service officer, is the best tool to get a veteran his claim. There is no other criteria than a for approval of a claim. The best criteria for getting a veteran's approval of claim is a well-prosecuted claim. That takes a highly trained, dedicated service officer.
May I interrupt you? Because
yes.
I'm going to have a hard time understanding what you're saying. I just made the case a second ago for the county veteran service officers. I think what you're talking about are the trained veteran service officers inside, like VFW or American Legion.
The veteran service organizations, like the VFW, American Legion, Purple Heart, DAV, also provide veteran service officers.
Okay.
They do essentially the same thing as the county service officers do. It's not a competition. There's just a requirement for that.
And I misspoke myself in specifying county, because I understand your point, and I just picked CVS, so maybe it's because the acronym rolls off my tongue so easily. But I understand that there are those. The training is rigorous.
Yes.
For those that may not be aware of how specialized this work is.
Basically, it takes at least 3 years for a service officer to become fully competent.
Okay.
In December of 2016, the Department of Oregon submitted testimony to the Senate House and Interim Committee on Veterans Emergency Preparedness. We now want to offer that same testimony to you today. It is our sincerest hope that this testimony will provide you with the helpful information in your efforts to determine funding for veteran services.
For the record, I am Judith Berger, Judge Advocate for the Department of Oregon, Veterans of Foreign Wars. I am an Army veteran, and I qualify for the VFW under my service in South Korea. Thank you for allowing us up here today. The Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States has a long and proud history working with and for veterans. We are the largest combat veteran organization in the United States, comprised of veterans who have served in every overseas conflict since the Spanish-American War. While our membership consists of combat veterans, our mission and our greatest passion is serving all veterans, service members, and their families. On December 1st, 2016, Governor Brown's proposed budget for the 2017-2019 biennium was released. We were very disappointed to read the proposal to cut 80% from the general fund for veteran services. That is nearly $10 million. We believe that Oregon has a general fund responsibility to our veterans. When the Oregon voters passed Measure 96 by 84%, the largest margin of any measure in the history of our great state, they did so with the understanding that that 1.5% of the lottery funds would be a supplement to the current service level from the general fund, not a substitute. On November 8, 2016, the voters overwhelmingly spoke in support of significant increases to the veteran service budget for the current and future years. The Department of Oregon, Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, understands that there are many factors and problems in balancing the budget and ensuring that all Oregonians are represented. In those deliberations, consider the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the other veteran service organizations when we ask you to continue the state's responsibility to veterans from the general fund at the current level and to supplement veteran services from Measure 96 lottery funds. In doing so, you honor and benefit veterans, their families, but also you honor the wishes of the Oregon voter and you benefit our economy.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, questions of Ms. Berger? Thank you. Your testimony, sir.
Senator Johnson, Representative Gomberg, and Committee. It's an absolute honor to be here today, and I thank each and every one of you for the time and your service to the state of Oregon. For the record, my name is Ken Kraft. I'm a senior vice commander for the state of Oregon's Department of Veterans of Foreign Wars. I am a retired U.S. Army officer, retired deputy sheriff of Multnomah County. Also, 46 surgeries later, double amputees. I've been through the VA system. I've been through the VSO system. And I can tell you that no one does more for veterans than the Veterans of Foreign Wars. We're the state's oldest veteran service organization serving veterans, coming on just prior to ODVA. That's over 70 years service. No one has done more claims with good outcomes for the communities than our group. So there is a slight difference, but the truth is we are local in every community in the state of Oregon. I think it's 85 to 87 different posts through districts and so forth. Let's go back to this. I want to give you some facts, some quick facts. You do have the testimony in front of you, and it is in the record as well. VFW service officers have routinely handled out about twice the number of claims, 480 on average, to 180 for the local service officers statewide. The VFW service office has routinely obtained $20 to $35 million. These are real dollars in communities each year. That's being able to send your children to school, to buy the house, to pay for the cars, to make the payments back into the community. These are real dollars. VFW service officers have been compensated about 50% of the rate that the county and other service officers. So a lot of what we're doing is volunteerism at the max. The last 2 years, I'm the top recruiter in the entire world for membership and retention. I've spoke to more young men and women from every conflict, every era, than any living person. And I can tell you that we are taking wonderful forms and that we're taking in the readings. What happens for each one of the generation? We've heard what the World War II and Korea vets do. We've heard about some of the Vietnam veterans. We've heard about the current ones. They were close on the county service office, exactly what they're saying. The Vietnam veteran was treated horribly, not just from the society in general, but also from our organization at that point. They were told it wasn't a real war. Well, I tell you what, right now, if you stick yourself and you bleed, blood is blood, pain is pain, the mother's grief is mother's grief. Those Vietnam veterans are heroes, tried and true. They did not lose that conflict. That was a political of anything loss. So any major conflict, we won that battle. With the young men and women returning home today, at that point we heard, can these young kids do it? The answer is yes, they did it, and they came home in record numbers. They were leading entire platoons or squads or companies, battalions over there, and they're coming back home to no jobs, working at a gas station for minimum wage. So you go from running millions of dollars worth of equipment and troops and responsible for the lives to coming home to something that's less than you expected. And then what do? There is no other way to get a claim started and get the care you need for mental health and the injuries and the long-term care than go through a veteran service officer. You're going to see a lot of small 501c3s, and I spoke for years on this. You look at the accounting practices, and usually they flop within a couple of years. Very well-intentioned, horses for vets, quilts, and so forth. But the truth is, for 117 years, the VFW has been unwavering supporting the men and women of all of our branches of military conflict. There is no other way in. That's why we highly train these folks. I do events across the state of Oregon and speak to veterans last weekend, and I'll do it again this next week, again at the next event. And some of these folks, like you heard from the service officer, are here. Those are horribly tragic stories. So I will yield back time to Judith or Jason if we have any left, or answer any questions you have, ma'am.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Colleagues, any questions? Regrettably, in order to get everyone heard, I'm going to thank this panel and call up the next panel. This would be Kevin Ferguson, Alta Lynch, and John Wrinkle.
I'm John Rickle, and they said everything I need to hear.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. And if you have a written statement, if you give it to the professional staff, we'll make it part of the record. And while this next panel is being seated, colleagues, you may have heard me mention having a tiger in a veteran's corner yesterday. The tiger is the one with the hat. Please provide your testimony.
My name is Kevin Ferguson. I'm 100% service. Okay. Today's been really emotional.
Do you want to let Ms. Lynch go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, please, Ms. Lynch.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Alta Lynch. I'm from Scappoose, Oregon. I volunteer with a nonprofit out of St. Helens working with veterans basically 7 days a week. Diplomacy is not one of my characteristics, so.
I can attest to that.
Yes. I would suggest that the campaign slogan for Governor Kate Brown's next election is "Your vote doesn't count." You might ask why I would suggest this. It's simple. Measure 96 was the most popular measure on the fall ballot, winning 84% to 16%. It sets aside 1.5% of Oregon lottery funds for services such as education, housing, health care, and helping veterans better access their benefits. Politicians send our military off to war and missions, and they greet them when they come home and reap the victory afterwards. Most don't go home with the veteran and his or her family. They don't live with the physical and the mental injuries and the scars that will follow our veterans and their families for life. Most don't see the destruction of the families. Ask yourself why suicides are higher in our military and veteran population. Time doesn't allow me to go into great detail and try to combat all the arguments for ignoring the voters. Some people will say it's Measure 5, the Oregon Health Plan, Measures 11, 57, etc. I don't care. Your predecessors, and I would venture to say possibly some serving in the legislature today, brought us to where we are with our budget deficits, promises we made while the financial impact was put on the back burner or ignored. I would put emphasis on our purse problem. The governor has succeeded in pissing off thousands of veterans along with thousands of voters. I would suggest you go back in history to the Bonus Army March in 1932 on Washington, D.C. The saga of the Bonus Army was born out of the inequality of the Selective Service Act of 1917. What our government did to those men and women was deplorable. Interesting that it was spearheaded by a former sergeant named Walter Waters, unemployed in Portland, Oregon. I'm asking you to fully fund ODVA as you have for the past 50 or so years from the general fund, that the revenue from Measure 96 is used for its original intent, just as the voters wanted. The challenges of adjustment, transition, post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injuries, and physical disabilities all need to be addressed, especially these are the things that result in barriers to their education, their employment, their health care, and their overall individual well-being, not to mention the survival of their families. Let's not have a bonus march in Oregon. Do what this constituents voted with the original intent of Measure 96, not the bait and switch scheme that Governor Brown has in mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ferguson?
Okay, I'm going to do my best here just to speak from my heart. Like I said, I'm 100% service-connected veteran. I actually have over 100% in service-connected disabilities. I got out in 06. I'm an OAF veteran. I didn't realize I was a veteran. Shortly thereafter, I got out as an alcoholic. I became a heroin addict, a cocaine addict, and I was homeless and on the streets until 2011. If it wasn't for the ODVA, but getting my service connection in and getting me my service connection, I wouldn't be a husband, I wouldn't be a father, I wouldn't be a homeowner that pays his taxes, I wouldn't have a driver's license. I've been convicted of 4 DUIs, I'm a felon, and, you know, it's hard getting services. You guys want to know how to help veterans? Because guys like me that go out to the homeless camps use my service connection money, get them blankets, drive them to treatment centers. I have anonymous veterans who have put tens of thousands of dollars of putting new teeth in men's faces. We drive them to treatment centers. We have backdoor contacts with social workers and doctors to where we can make a phone call, and these are constantly transitioning in the VA to get them the services they need. And a lot of time, you know, like when I didn't have a driver's license or an ID and I was homeless, someone dropped me off at the clinic here in Salem. They called the cops on me. The cops said, sorry, you don't have an ID, but you do have an active warrant for your arrest. Please go commit a crime so we can then take you into the jail during the ice storm of 2008. That's what I was told. You know, I was under the bridge, under the Marion Street Bridge, and a cop pulled me out and made the mission give me a place on the floor in the front lobby where the door was blowing cold air underneath it. You know, I was 129 pounds. I started. I found Alcoholics Anonymous, and got clean for a little bit. You know, I ran into Gus Bedwell. He started a service connection disability claim for me. It was rejected. He was able to get me 80% of my GI Bill, which was amazing. I then reapplied in 2011 with Vicki Kaufman down in Southern Oregon, and she fought her butt off for me to get it, and I got through the first time at 130% collectively. And I know it's just the different connections, but 100% for PTSD. I am so scared to sit in front of you guys because I don't know any of you, I don't want to be in here, and there's way too many people. You know, it's just important that, you know, we got this extra funding, let's keep this funding for the veterans, and you know, it's just, we're all here trying to do the best we can, and I didn't know that I was a veteran. I was just handed my DD-214 and said, take care. When I thought of a veteran, I thought of my World War II grandfather who served, you know, and liberated Auschwitz and stormed an imperial palace of the Nazi Germans. You know, that's what it's like, but I have literally gone through living hell and hearing these stories. I'm sitting here reliving these experiences and my time in the service. I go to 6 to 8 appointments a month just to stay stable, and I travel over 1,000 miles a month just to do this. And you know, I'm grateful for the services that I've gotten, but we need to do more to help the lost veterans who are out there who need these services that I'm getting. And so, sorry for getting so emotional, but that's all I got.
Thank you very much. For somebody that didn't want to be here, you've given some of the most powerful testimony of today. Colleagues, any questions? Thank you very much. The next panel is Dennis Guthrie, Wes Larson, and Mr. Montes. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
You can pick your order.
Good. Co-Chairman Johnson and Co-Chairman Grumberg and committee, thank you for your time and allowing me to speak. I have basically, before I start, Ms. Johnson, Randy Povey from Redmond, Oregon, said to say hi.
Good. Tell him hi back.
And once again, thank you for you and your trust, your family's trust, for helping us get the downtown flag committee going in Redmond. We're up to over 1,400 flags now with seven small utilitarians. But my name is Dennis Guthrie. I'm a past department commander, past Surgeon General of the National VFW. And basically, I have 2 or 3 pages, but I know we're short on time, so I just want to say a couple of things. Measure 96, 84% of those who voted for it as a supplement, not a substitute. Please fully fund ODVA and what it has been so that we can go on. You've heard the testimony already. I don't need to go any farther than that. That's all I want to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Guthrie. And if you would provide your testimony, or if you want to send a clean copy, you can send it to the professional staff, and we'll make sure that your whole statement gets included.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Wes Larson. I'm a resident of Kaiser and former commander of VFW Post 661 here in Salem, Oregon. It's already been said, and I want to emphasize it again, that the impression of veterans in this state was that we would continue to receive the allotted amount from the general fund, and that 96 was providing additional funds. The general public of the veterans here in the Salem area was extremely disappointed and very upset that the budget presented was as it was. The additional funds, from the viewpoint of many of us veterans, was to go to the county service officers throughout the state, and also to supplement additional funds for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And as Director Smith mentioned yesterday, they're in dire need of upgrading their IT facilities. when you're working on an IBM 360, you're working on equipment from the late 70s and early 80s. When you're working with COBOL, COBOL is a language that has been outdated for over 30 years. So I can only imagine the trouble that they're going through trying to keep up with the service requests and all the other things that they do. I would like to compliment Oregon in doing what they have done for veterans. It's much more than many other states. But there is nobody that provides more for the state of Oregon than veterans. First of all, as veterans, we have provided and secured the welfare of our country. We have provided for and secured the welfare of the state. We come back not expecting anything, and we continue to work and to service our community in our jobs, in our churches, in our organizations that we volunteer for. Then when we find out that we have a problem from our service, and we start receiving money from the federal government, every penny of that goes back into the state in rents, mortgage, taxes, in food and groceries and utilities, which provide jobs for this state. So when you're looking at your budget and all of these other worthy causes that need additional funding, how many of those causes actually give back to the state of Oregon? I myself came back expecting nothing, went back to work, tried to be productive, and found out that issues related to my service was interfering with my ability to properly hold a job. I finally got an 80% disability through the VA and unemployability, which is equivalent to 100%. And I still volunteer for my community. I'm the amateur radio operator in charge of communications at the Kaiser City Hall for Emergency Operations Center. I volunteer for the Marion County Amateur Radio Emergency Services, which is part of Oregon Emergency Management. So even though I'm 100% and not employed any longer, doesn't mean I'm not productive. And I am just one example out of thousands in this state that provide back to the state as effective and as productive citizens of this state. And all we're asking is for what we were promised.
Thank you. Thank colleagues, you. Any questions for this witness? Thank you. Mr. Montes.
Good afternoon. Co-chairman, board, this is my first time in front of the committee. I'm a little shy.
You're going to do fine.
Afraid to talk.
You're going to do fine.
But everybody's covered everything that needs to be covered. What I want to talk about is the veterans that are underneath the bridge or anywhere else. I deal with them every week. We feed them when we can. If they'll show up, they do not want to come up, because they're afraid of authority. The younger group doesn't want to come in because they don't think that the older group understands what they're talking about. And the old group is afraid of them because they don't want to talk. I found that you can talk to each one of them. One of my groups, which is a World War II group, which consists of two Oregonians, and one of them is Bill Wingate. We've been friends for 34 years. And if we can talk, anybody else can talk. My sons, who are also in the service, have talked to them. They can communicate. Afghanistan, Iraq, and all the other places. I've got 36 nieces and nephews. My wife was in. And the rest of the family. We represent all five branches. But these kids that are coming back home now don't want to listen because they're afraid they're not going to get anything. And you try to talk to them, you can't be serious with them, you got to joke with them. My biggest thing, some people might not approve, but to my method, but my first remark is, let me see your green card. What is he talking about? I said, aren't you from across the border? Well, no, then you're okay. You have a green card? Yes. And pull up my Bi-Mark card. Well, that's not a green card. I said, yes, ID card used to be green. But it breaks the monotony. And these young kids, you're crazy. I said, yeah, I am. My wife keeps telling me, and she's been doing it for 57 years. So what can I tell you? Well, you don't understand. I said, well, tell me about it. I said, I've got kids your age. I've got grandchildren your age. I've got nieces your age. They've all been there. What we didn't talk about in the old days, we're talking about now. And if I don't understand what you're talking about, I'll find out from my family. I got a granddaughter who went to Afghanistan. They called her a dumb broad. Heavy equipment operator and bulldozers. With a calf. She came back. They were going up north. They got hit. The unit went down. The gunner went down. She jumped on the terror goat, got 50 caliber machine gun, got 23 of them. They don't call her a dumb broad anymore. Her thing is now, if my two grandmothers can do it, why can't I? She came back, got involved in the shooting in Fort Hood. She said, Grandpa, I'm gonna have to get out. She was gonna make it a career. I get shot over there, I come over here and I get shot over here. Women do not get the respect that they should be getting. I don't care how much macho image you got. Forget that macho image. That woman is there to be your partner and treat her that. Give her the respect. She might not be your wife or anything else, but I don't care if she's one or 101. Give that woman the respect she deserves. A woman can do anything she wants. Joan of Arc started it. Why can't anybody else? Women have to prove themselves three times over. Why? She gave you birth. Why should she have to prove anymore? I delivered a baby girl in Chinon, France, when I was 17 years old, when I started out as a medic. I've done everything the Army's got except work in finance, or they'd be broke more than they are today. But I just want to say these young kids that are coming back, that's why I never push it to try to get anything from Agent Orange, because I got an Agent Orange cancer for and a pacemaker. And I try not to go to the VA because they've got enough other people that are worse than I am. And my wife keeps saying, you've got to go. You've got to. No, I don't have to go. I said, I've got you. I don't need nothing else. I don't have anything to prove. I've got you, the kids, and the grandkids and great-grandkids. With your 7 children, 20 grandchildren, 25 grandchildren. I've got more money than anybody in the world. But saying all that, I want to thank you and everybody on the board.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Montes? Thank you very much. The next panel up is Mr. Cluding, Mr. Ensley, and Mr. Holton. And ladies and gentlemen, if anyone, the sign-up sheet I think has been taken in. Is there anybody else, just by show of hands, that wishes to testify that maybe did not sign up? I still have other names to call, but anybody who isn't on a sign-up sheet that wants to testify? Okay. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Whatever order you want to bat in.
I guess I've been volunteered. Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair Johnson and Gomberg, and members of the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of Oregon Veterans. My name is Eric Ensley, and I am the president of the Oregon County Veterans Service Officers Association. I am providing testimony today as president of this association and not as a supervisor for Multnomah County Veterans Services. Healthcare, housing, education, disability compensation, transportation, economic enhancement, including workforce development through community partnerships. These are just a few of the needs veterans and their families have within our Oregon counties. Oregon voters recognize the needs of our veterans and approve funding for increased support through the passing of Measure 96 with an overwhelmingly near 84%. But I don't have to tell all of you this. You have heard from your constituents. From rural counties to metro, veteran service officers provide leveraging opportunities to enhance other local and state services. We are a vital link to veterans by bridging community partnerships, and the greatest strength of all is the partnership between county and state. Unified in training and filing claims as advocates and representatives for veterans and their families. As a veteran service officer, or as veteran service officers, we have expanded our geographic reach to meet the needs of veterans wherever they are seeking services. Today, we are a massive cohort of national, state, and county veteran service officers. We're co-located at college campuses, senior centers, the Portland Veterans Center, and yes, including the Portland VA healthcare system, 5 days a week. Our credo is to provide access to veterans wherever they may be, so we have become more mobile in our outreach. We have expanded our reach to allow nearly 500% increase in providing access to veterans and their families. Each of Oregon counties share similar growth and expansion efforts. The Veteran Service Office has added capacity building with veteran service officers and community partnerships through the addition of Federal AmeriCorps VISTA volunteers through the Corporation for National and Community Services, with a focus on anti-poverty among GLBTQ veterans, women veterans, veterans within communities of color, veterans and military families with children in school, and veterans and military families who experience domestic violence or intimate partner violence. Many of these veterans have increased rates of experiencing poverty and coincident homelessness. Our veteran service officers have an incredible impact on veterans and their families that cannot be simply put to words. With the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs state pass-through to county veteran service offices, we are capable of expanding our reach to serve more veterans and their families that provide an incredible return on investment with the drawdown from federal benefits. Imagine what more could be accomplished with increased pass-through to county veteran service offices. Extended geographical reach through community engagement activities to proactively engage those who are less aware of their access to federal benefits. More federal dollars, less reliance on safety net services through state and local general funds. Who knows? We continue to raise the bar. We would love to be able to expand the geographic region of our community outreach to help veterans access federal benefits. These opportunities help veterans improve their quality of life as well as reduce reliance on state and local resources. We implore you to fully fund the 2017-2019 veterans budget and honor the intent of Measure 96. Supplement, not substitute. And I have to say, with Mr. Whipple's testimony today and the impact that rural counties see, the lack of transportation, lack of access that many of our veterans in rural communities aren't able to get to, that leveraging needs to take place. I'm nationally accredited, state accredited, and county veteran service officer. As president of the Oregon County Veteran Service Officers Association, I'm a proud veteran to have been given this opportunity to give testimony to all of you today.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Kluding.
Good afternoon, Senator Johnson, Co-Chair Gumberg, members of the committee. Thank you very much for the honor of weighing in today. My name is Dwight Holton, and I have the honor and pleasure to be the CEO of the Northwest's leading nonprofit dedicated to preventing substance abuse and suicide, Lines for Life. So thank you very much for allowing me to testify. I am here to encourage continued funding of the state-supported military helpline, which has reached thousands of Oregon vets in recent years and which is up for renewal, and I think the contract ends currently in February of 2018. As I think you all know, serving veterans is a key part of the mission of Lines for Life. Last year we talked to about 75,000 people nationwide from on our on our different lines, 38,000 of those folks were veterans. And a core part of that is the fact that we have become the sole backup center for the Veterans Crisis Line run by the Federal Veterans Administration. They once had a network of six backup centers. They decided it would only be one backup center, and without question, they chose us at Lines for Life. The state-supported military helpline, which you created about 5 years ago, I think, is an essential part of the web of services provided to veterans in crisis here in Oregon. Obviously, first and foremost is the crisis lines. We, across the phone as well as web, text, chat, we reach veterans every day from throughout Oregon. During the course of the year, we talk to veterans in all 36 counties just about every year. I was checking those stats before we got here today. Reaching veterans and their families is just a part of what that military helpline service is. As I've discussed with Director Smith, our outreach and our engagement on the project that Co-Chair Gomberg mentioned at the outset of the hearing, reaching veterans who aren't enrolled for services, are key places where we are working to improve and where we're working to be a part of the state's effort to better serve veterans. So on the outreach front, whether it's the Native American Veterans Summit hosted by the Grand Ron, or a stand down in Baker, or the Columbia County Veterans Task Force, the Multnomah County Veterans Task Force, we're there. I think that we could aptly be called Director Smith's shadow, and proudly so, perhaps not cut as well as the former Marine that he is. But we try our best, and everywhere he goes, we like to be, because we think that outreach and engagement is an essential part of what we do. And we've been working with the director staff on how we can make sure the people who do call us, whether it's on the military helpline or any of our other lines, are in fact enrolled for services. And if not, we make that connection so that they can become enrolled. So we are thrilled to be a part of this. We are thrilled to do this important work. We urge you to help identify funding for the future of that contract. It's $175,000 a year. I submit that it's money well invested and well spent. I was talking to our military lines director, Matt Klozowski, who I think many of you know, you see in your districts, just the other day. And you know, Matt had just taken a call from a vet who called with a gun loaded, ready to take his own life. Matt spent about an hour and a half on the phone with him, swapped buddy stories, because Matt was a medic in the Army who served in Iraq. This is an Iraq-era veteran. And swapped stories about loved ones, about reasons to live. And at the end of the hour and a half, the gun was unloaded, locked in the trunk of the car. They had a safety plan and a plan for follow-up. It is unbelievably humbling to work in an office down the hall from people that this is what they do every day, 24 hours a day. That's made possible in large part because of your support, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Holden. Questions for Mr. Holden? I have a couple of comments. Colleagues, for those of you that are new to the legislative process, you may not know that Mr. Holden served very honorably and well as our United States Attorney here in Oregon, and I want to thank him for that service. He also, through Lines for Life, has put together a school safety hotline that is peer-run, and that I presume is still up and going.
Absolutely. If I may, the youth line, which is peer-to-peer, it's teens are on the line from 4 to 10 every day. They go through significant training, and they're closely supervised. But they reach other kids better than anybody can, right? You know, if I was to say to a teenager, have you talked to your mom about that, I'd get an eye roll. But when a teenager says, you know, that's the kind of thing I might talk to my mother about, they get a totally different response. And I'll tell you, Senator Johnson, 4 years ago when I came to the, or 3 years ago, I guess, when I came to the helm of Lines for Life, the previous year we had talked to 800 kids on the youth line. Last year we talked to 10,500. We're growing that program. We have 70 teen volunteers working on the lines now. It's really great.
I saw an opportunity to meet some of these teen peers when I had the privilege of serving on the School Safety Task Force, and these kids are just wonderful. And then last but not least, colleagues, there is a proposal floating around in this building to limit the amount of support for not-for-profits. And I would submit that at a time when state services are being withdrawn and we are looking to the faith community and the not-for-profits to clothe the naked and feed the hungry and prevent people from swallowing a gun, a proposal that would limit donations to not-for-profits seems to me to be unbelievably wrong-headed.
We like to be a way to leverage your dollars and spend them more effectively. I add money to everything you give us. Trust me.
Thank you, Mr. Holt.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon.
For the record, Bill Cluding, Oregon Air Guard, 1960-1964, member of Legion Post 20. If I may, co-chairs... I have December's American Legion magazine. I'd like to read just a few quotes from the veterans, the Secretary Bob McDonald.
Please.
He's now since been replaced, but he left office very frustrated for the lack of activity back in Washington, D.C. Now, just a few quotes. After a long summer recess and a month back in town, lawmakers departed again until after the elections, failing to pass a dozen initiatives he views essential to sustain the veterans in Oregon, this nation. The Senate Veterans Affairs Committee fought over a bill and the Veterans First Act omnibus bill. We had a lot of initiatives that would have benefited our nation's veterans. One senator held it up and blocked it for a hearing. It never made it to the Senate floor. Meanwhile, his quote is, the House has passed several initiatives which the Senate refuses to hear. So you can understand his frustration. This isn't going to help our problem at all. If we're going to help our Oregon veterans with the turmoil in D.C. today, we're going to have to do it on our own. We're going to have to take care of our own. I wish I had the answer for you, but working with these folks, maybe we can come up with one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cluding. Thank you, panel. Any questions for Mr. Cluding? All right, next panel up. I apologize. I am going to struggle with the handwriting here. Ken, is there a Ken? I'm struggling with the last name. Thanks, Till Rennie. Somebody named last name Maggs, M-A-G-G-S. Okay, is there somebody signed up to testify that I have not called your name? Because I really am struggling with the handwriting, those two.
Rosie.
A Rosie?
Mags.
Looks like she might have just stepped up.
Okay, and Ken, like Lieber? Lieber?
And I just came here to observe.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. All right, and Andy Smith. Please go ahead, Mr. Smith, while we're rounding up the others.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, Representative Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Andy Smith, and I work at the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm the Veterans Policy Manager. So you've heard the passion today that's filling the room. Many veterans here, many advocates for veterans. I just wanted to recognize folks that came from the county world, that recognize them especially, again, Mr. Clark, Mr. Whipple, and Mr. Ensley. Similar to their passion and their work, our county commissioners are extremely passionate about the implementation of Measure 96, the full implementation. And of course, we mean by that the current level of general funds plus the additional lottery dollars. What I thought I would do very quickly, the only point that I would make in addition to what you've heard, is to restate and reinforce some of the testimony from Commissioner or Director Smith yesterday on the, I call it the Oklahoma opportunity. So maybe you remember the difference between Oklahoma and Oregon, which is really hardly anything at all. Maybe 9,000 more veterans in Oklahoma, but $500 million more of compensation and pension. So there's a lot of ways to think about lost opportunity. But I think that kind of guiding star to what's possible, to what level of opportunity exists and that's real, as opposed to maybe what we think could happen, I think that's very possible in Oregon. So instead of $1.3 billion a year in comp and pen, that we could get to something like $1.8 it's also interesting that their state, they actually serve less in their VA medical system than we do here. They just happen to be higher in the comp and pen. So I just wanted to emphasize that on the record, because this is a, it's not fantasy to think that we could achieve that in Oregon. I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions for Mr. Smith? All right, that concludes the people that have that have signed up to testify. We've called everybody on the list. Is there anyone else who has not testified that feels inclined to do so? Signify by hand. Okay. Well, in that case, that concludes.
Do we want to hear from the director if he's just positive for the table?
Mr. Director, would you please step forward? We have the professional staff putting in a word for you, so.
Good afternoon.
You and Ms. Brickman need to finish up one of your pups. Thank you so much.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith, director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And if there's ever a question of whether the governor or the legislature are holding ODVA accountable, rest assured, our veterans and our partners will certainly hold us accountable throughout. Very briefly, so that
before you do your testimony, I just want to acknowledge that Mr. Ensley has an assistant today. And would you like to introduce her? Can you tell us your name, sweetie? Lila?
Nyla.
Well, welcome. And is this your first testimony that you've ever come to? All right, good. Well, we hope we see you in the building again. All right, Mr. Director.
Nyla said she wanted to be a Navy veteran like Eric, but we're recruiting her for the Marines, so we'll see.
You're talking to a woman whose mother was a naval officer. We're sticking with the Navy. All right, please continue.
And very broadly, the same challenge that you all are going through, we went through with our own agency request budget. Very broadly, we divide it wherever these new resources or existing resources land, very broadly, a third, a third, a third mentality. Again, these are big dollars for ODVA and veterans efforts, small in the larger grant scheme, and investing in proven and leveraged systems. The veteran service officers that you've heard, both at the county and the service organizations, some investments at that statewide level, but then also the broader partnerships of others who are serving. I'll skip POP 103, which is a home loan, really one position on a QA compliance out of the Dodd-Frank Act, and some improvements to our headquarters so that we can continue to bring leasing revenues into the ODVA. But on that mobilizing partnership, so the governor's budget did set aside, in addition to all the resources for the veteran service officers, about $3 million to mobilize broader partnerships. And we focused in on three core areas of student veterans, housing and homelessness efforts, and then mental health. On student veterans, there's a great bill flowing through the policy committees to get grant dollars down to the veteran service, the student veteran coordinators on campus, and the student centers. They don't necessarily submit claims back to the federal VA, but they do serve that hub of the wheel and linking to make sure that we're getting the best out of our GI Bill resources that run to a $145 million a year benefit for student veterans. On housing and homelessness, some proven channels as well that already exist off of the recording fee. Every time a document is recorded, $5 is assessed to better house homeless veterans, help first-time homeowners, and affordable housing. And there's kind of a split of opinion whether those resources could best be used on emergency housing efforts or driven further into affordable housing efforts. It takes a lot more to buy those spaces and units, but that builds the capacity longer term, whereas the emergency housing sometimes leverages the other funds through the community action networks statewide. The last one was around mental health. And we had focused in on the growing opportunity of peer-to-peer services and grant dollars out to organizations where veterans are helping veterans. But that could be another area. The crisis line resources are one-time fundings, are not embedded in the governor's budget, and that could also be an opportunity for some of the lottery dollars to support there. Our last policy option package is a capital construction request that we'll be going forward with about $2.4 million, both around classroom spaces up at the Dells to make sure we can still do the recruitment and retention of nursing staff and do a lot of that training in-house. The Dells facility is about 20 years old, so significant investments on the phone system, shifting to VoIP, electronic health records, and also security cameras. And then, oddly, a parking lot for our new Lebanon Veterans Home. We have about 120 spaces, and it has become a hub of the community down there, both for community engagement, the family members that are coming to visit the veterans. So we have an adjoining lot where we would be able to put in surge parking lot for staff and family members as well. And with that, I think I'll hand it over to Ms. Brickman, or happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Let's see if there are any questions for the director. Mr. Director, have you prioritized those policy option packages within, were they presented in prioritized order?
Correct. So they are in co-chairs, members of the committee, they are in priority order. Sometimes easier on the, so of the lottery funded ones, really wanting to take care of some of those core necessities first, make sure that we do leverage those veteran services and the veteran service officers before going into new arenas through the housing and homelessness or other partnership resources.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Brickman.
It's there. It's down there.
It's tough to get a good assistant, isn't it?
It is. But then you could say the same thing about me. Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, for the record, I'm Tamara Brickman with the Chief Financial Office from the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm just going to do a very brief overview of the governor's budget process and provide you with a little background of the process that we went through. Primarily, in the governor's budget, when focusing on the Department of Veterans Affairs, there were three fairly significant issues that the governor wanted to focus on, and that was obviously ensure that we can provide funding to increase the number of veterans that are filing claims so we can draw down more federal benefit dollars into the state, address issues facing the demographic of Oregon veterans with respect to the aging of veterans, and then also focus on education, homelessness, and mental health issues facing veterans. One particular issue that was of importance to the governor's office is to ensure that the funding that was passed in Measure 96 could be used to end the subsidization of programs from the home loan reserves. In 91 and 93, when there was a general fund shortfall, the legislature directed the department, reduced the general fund to the department that the department had been receiving, and then asked the department to use its loan reserves to fund its veteran service programs, and it had been doing so clear up until this governor's budget. Even in this current biennium, the loan reserves have been funding positions and services in the veteran services program that are not related to home loan. And so to stabilize the home loan program well into the future, the governor's budget proposes to basically shift those positions and dollars that were being spent by the home loan program onto lottery funds, and basically the subsidization moving forward so that we're preserving those loan funds, because in the last six fiscal years there have been some fiscal losses to the loans, partially due to having to use those funds to pay for programs.
Mr. Director, in phase two, and colleagues, the agency will be coming back, I think given the amount of anxiety that exists right now about the use of the lottery funds, I would like, for the benefit of the committee, a little bit more in-depth discussion of the vulnerability of the home loan program and the decision to basically eat your seed corn to fund operations, and to at least understand a little bit more about what stabilizing that would mean and what the benefit to veterans is.
Certainly.
Okay, thank you. Please continue, Ms.
And just real quickly, as you can see, there's the history of expenditures within the Department of Veterans Affairs has grown substantially from the 2011-13 biennium. And primarily of interest and note is the growth in general fund. We went from $6.4 million in just general fund in the 2011-13 biennium with actuals to $21.9 million combined general lottery fund in this biennium. And just of note,
from current service level to the governor's budget. That's an 89.2% increase in general and lottery funding and a 5.4% total fund increase. The governor's budget, again, just as I spoke, aligns the funding sources to better match program expenditures and preserve loan reserves. It also provides resources for aging veterans. I believe we provided two or three new positions to deal with aging veterans issues specifically. It provides resources to fund partnerships aimed at improving veterans' education, helping with homelessness issues, and addressing mental health issues. And then, of course, provides resources to modernize the technology systems for their conservatorship and home loan programs. And generally, I'll just briefly go over these next expenditures, just so you can see the biggest expenditure within the department is other funds, non-limited other funds. And that's associated with the home loan program with respect to actually the loans that they provide, and then also the debt service on those loans. There is some small amount of debt service, general fund debt service in here associated with the buildup of the Lebanon home, which will be paid off in this biennium, I believe. So you can kind of see the categories that expend in. Again, the largest expenditures are in debt service and special payments. That has to do with the home loan program. Very small percentage in personal services for the department. 4% of the overall budget is expended on personal services. And then services and supplies is about 20%. And then finally, for 2017-19, just to give you an idea of what the revenue sources are other than general fund and lottery fund for the department, the largest source of funding or revenues are home loan repayments, bond sales, and interest earnings. That accounts for 77% of the revenue. Charges for services is about 18%, and this is charges relating to conservatorship fees and those kinds, some of those things for the services that they provide. General and lottery.
May I stop you there for just a second?
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that in some of those conservatorships, there is no ability to charge fee for service if you have an indigent, impecunious veteran with no family. How do you absorb those costs? We can do that in phase two. Okay.
General fund and lottery fund now account for 4% of the budget, and then there's just some other small sources of revenue that is 1%, and those are donations and contributions, rental payments that the department receives for renting out space in its building, and then some sales income with respect to some of their publications. And with that, that ends my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Colleagues, any questions of the Chief Financial Officer's office? Thank you, Ms. Brickman. Thank you, Mr. Director. Any concluding questions, comments? Representative Gomber.
Madam Co-Chair, one of the most compelling hearings we've had in a long, long time.
I would agree.
I agree.
All right.
Testimony here must have inspired you.
Anything for the good of the order, colleagues?
No.
There being none, we're adjourned.